The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another Red Sox Hot Stove edition of the podcast. Tonight, we have at least one loaded topic that has a lot of moving parts to it, so we're going to be getting into that. Basically, news has, I don't know if you want to say leaked out, that the Red Sox are strongly considering moving Raffy Devers from third base over to first base, and there's a lot of implications involving that, so we're going to get into that. Probably some Juan Soto talk in the second segment, but with me tonight, Jason Kelly, Jeremy Schilling. How are you, gentlemen?
Not too bad. Just ready for some actual news to get going, but as we know, it typically takes a while, especially when you're dealing with Scott Boras' clients. He likes to bleed it out until about January, February. So hopefully with Soto, it doesn't take that long. And, you know, obviously these other developments are certainly interesting. But, yeah, until we get, like, some real news, it's kind of like you're still in wait-and-see mode. But not too bad.
So, Terry, I'm good because I read the Devers to third, from third base to first base, as Cassis is going to be off my team. And I'm here for that. Get that guy away from my team, please.
I'm neutral, I would say. I could very well be swayed to president of the Move Casas fan club, but I'm just kind of feeling it out. You know, we'll see. We did survive Hanley for a couple years at first with some weird antics. You know, there's always someone on the team. For me, all those years, it was kind of David Price. Pedroia annoyed me in the last few years, and, you know, so on and so forth. But
I never liked Kevin Youkilis.
I wasn't a Youkilis guy either.
Not a Youkilis guy.
Nope. I still put him, you know, towards the bottom of that list, though, of guys I didn't like. But yeah, I don't mind him in the booth so much, but I've gotten to the point where I'm like, he's never going to like invigorate me as a fan. I'm never going to get fired up, you know, listening to Youkilis, but he is a safe guy to have in there.
Yeah. He got like a touch better in the broadcast booth last season, but it's still lacking from what we had.
Yeah. I know.
Well, coming off of Remy and Eckersley, those are tough, impossibly tough shoes to fill with, especially when Don Orsillo was the play-by-play guy.
I don't know how you screw that up.
Well, that's a topic for a lighter day.
Yeah.
But they screwed that up majorly. I mean, just absolutely butchered that thing. Essentially, they blamed Orsillo for bad ratings, even though they were in last place. But that's all I'll say about that.
Yeah, and it just seemed like Warner had a hard-on for O'Brien for some reason. There was a relationship there, and he just very naively thought O'Brien could keep the line moving, and it didn't really, well, you did have some first place years there right away because it was the Dombrowski era, but it hasn't been good. I was kind of hoping we'd get news that O'Brien would be tossed, you know, within days of the season ending, but if that was going to happen, we'd know by now. So we'll see. All right. So do we buy it? Is Raffy Devers going to be playing first base? Like, is there a strong enough plausibility to that? Jason, we'll start off with you.
I honestly don't think so. I'm not quite sure, you know, where these reports are coming from and why exactly they're even entertaining it. As Jeremy said, if you're going to move him to first, you got to trade Casas. And all we've heard from the front office and from Breslow is that they don't want to trade Casas. Now, that could be smokescreen, as, you know, teams like to do. But I just, because you're not going to move Casas to DH. He's 24 years old. Like, you don't do that with a 24-year-old prospect. So I just don't really think it's all that logical. I would rather just keep Rafi where he is at third base. He's fine there. His defense isn't terrible. It's not great. I think he's at best, you know, an average defender. And then, you know, on his sort of worst years, he's below average. But keep in mind, he's playing with two bad shoulders last year. So if people are worried about his defense, I would say that had a lot to do with his health more than anything else. I'd rather just keep him at third. And, you know, look, I'm not a big Casas guy either, but unless you're getting like George Kirby for him, I'm not looking to trade Tristan Casas. Like that report the other day that they might entertain Casas for Brian Wu. Like, no, I'm not doing that. Look, I'm not a Casas guy, but I still recognize the high upside. So unless you're getting a George Kirby for him, which I don't think you will, I'm not trading him, and I don't think they will either.
What about if you pair him with other assets to get Crochet?
Then I'd be with that. Yeah. So if that's the play, if it's Casas and a couple of your prospects for Garrett Crochet, and that's why they're entertaining moving Devers to first, fine. Okay. I can get into that because now you've got a top line starter. You can go out and sign another one. Suddenly you've got a bolstered rotation. Yes, you took away from your lineup a little bit, but you know, if they signed Bregman, I to play third, I don't think that'd be terrible. You wouldn't get too much of a drop off. He's a right-handed bat, which would help you as well. I'm not sure I'm into these Nolan Arenado rumors. I think that guy is slowly reaching cooked territory. So I'm not sure I want to bring in 34-year-old Nolan Arenado. And look, Bregman's numbers have regressed as well the last couple of years. So it's kind of pick your poison with that. Either way, you're bringing in a guy who's probably past his prime to play third base. But at least Bregman, I think, you know, he's a winner, and I still think he's got a little bit more in the tank than Arenado does. So if that's the case, I'm down with it. I don't think Breslow has the guts to trade Casas. I don't. Even for someone like Crochet, I just think, I don't know. I don't think he has it to pull the trigger if that's what the White Sox are asking for. I think he's too afraid to, in his first year, you know, have the fan base turn on him because for some reason, everyone here loves Tristan Casas and wants him to stay in Boston forever. So I guess if you're asking me like to put a percentage on it, I think it's below 50% chance that something like that happens. I'd put it around like 20% that Devers moves to first, Casas is traded for a pitcher, and they sign a third baseman. I don't think that's what their priority is right now.
Here's the problem real quick with pairing Casas up in the Crochet deal. It's just, he doesn't fit the rebuild timeline. He's going to be on year three, I think, of his service time. And you could make the argument, all right, well, they could extend him. And yes, that's true. They absolutely could. But their biggest contract in franchise history is 5 years, $75 million. So I don't see how Casas really lines up. If I lose out on Soto, and I think that's going to happen, we'll get into it more later, but I immediately pivot to the Blue Jays and say, all right, are you open to trading Vladimir? And then I want to talk to Vladimir's agents. Is he open to an extension? Because the other thing nobody's talking about is he will be the prize of next year's free agent class, but how much does Soto elevate his value? Like, because if Soto gets 600, suddenly I think Vladimir goes probably from 300 to 400, which is insane for a first baseman. But that would be what I pivot to. But Jeremy, what are your thoughts? Are you buying the rumors on Devers to first?
Yes. I had a whole take, and then I had a lot to unpack with Jason's comments. So let me see if I can get this right in my head. Devers, Jason, we don't catch the ball at a high level. And I know Devers has improved slightly in the last year or so, and he's been a little bit more mechanically sound with his throwing, so he's making less throwing errors. But we could get, that could be a spot where we improve defensively. And for that reason, and the wear and tear on Devers, I like him a lot at first base because it opens up additional possibilities from outside the organization. I don't discount getting rid of that quirky personality, which we've discussed a lot during the season. So for a number of reasons, I like it a lot. the ability to find somebody that can play third base consistently, be in the lineup. We've talked a lot about Cassis's injury history. And while I never root for injuries, the fact is we have to talk about it with that player. And I do understand before I get tweeted at that the rib injury was a freak thing. I get it. But every year it's something. So it is a concern. And anyone that wants to get mad at me, go ahead. But at least admit to yourself that you have to consider Cassis's injury history when you are building a roster, because you have to have some sort of plan in place. And that could be if he gets hurt, move Devers. I don't know. But I'd like to go in with Devers at first. I think there's more options at third base, generally speaking, including within the organization, moving someone from second base to third, or maybe Trevor Story could play there, although I don't know that his arm's going to hold up. Jason just gave me a stink face with that one, so he's not going to like that.
I don't think that noodle arm is going to work at third base.
Yeah, I give the caveat, Jason. Give me credit. Sure. But you know what I'm saying? There's a few more options within the organization, without the organization, to try to fill that spot. And guys, we've got to get a right-handed at bat. And now, with all that said, Devers stays at third if we can go get Vlad Jr. I've been a proponent of that in the mid-season deadline show. I was all in on that. I would pay Vlad. And a lot of this is predicated, and you'll hear my take again later in more detail, but we are not seriously involved in the Soto sweepstakes. We're not. And I'll save the balance of my comments for that for later. But for those reasons, I'm all in on Devers to first, Cassis to a different organization. And Cassis could be how you go get your third baseman. Right, he has value. There's suckers out there. They love his pop. They'll look away, a little blind eye on the injury history, on the quirky personality, because there is that huge upside with him.
Yeah, it's definitely fair that like you could also involve Cassis to go get a third baseman if there's one out there that you want. Just real quick on the why I don't think he's going for Crochet, because, and this is more to Terry's point, like the White Sox are more than 5 years away from contending. They are light years away from contending again. That's why I think it's more likely if they are looking to trade him, it's with Seattle, because Seattle has, you know, they have a surplus of pitching. They just need offense. Every year it's the same story with that team. They have great pitching and they can never score. So you flip one of their pitchers, Cassis is involved. I think it makes a little more sense that way, but I still don't see it happening.
Yeah, so on that side of it, Chicago has to understand that they got a serious problem on their hands, and Cassis can be an asset for them at the trade deadline at the end of the season. He has a hot first half. You trade him while his value is at its highest point, and you continue to build assets that way. So there's no reason you can't flip a player just because you got him. He doesn't need to necessarily be in the long term plan, especially if he's coming off a season where he missed over 100 games. He starts out hot, his value increases, you turn him in that moment, and you get more assets. So Chicago's got to be smart enough to understand that, I think. The other thing I wanted to touch on, which I forgot, please do not go get a plus 35-year-old third baseman on the back end of his career. Please don't do that. That would be so incredibly frustrating. We have so many assets. We have a surplus of prospects. We have attractive big league talent in Abreu, in Cassis. If you believe the catcher coming is Teal is the real deal, then Wong could be an asset, although I don't love that because I really do like Wong. Now's the time to go get a guy in that spot. Overpay for him if you have to. Just let's not do the end of the season thing. That's something you do to fill a hole because you're in it. You're looking like you're going to get to 95 wins. It's August 1st and you need to plug a hole. Fine. Go buy me a half season rental. That's I don't care how old, as long as he's productive. But if we're looking to continue to build a well-balanced roster, let's go get a guy. He doesn't have to be a superstar, but let's go get a guy that's going to catch the ball defensively, be healthy, and be somebody you can count on in the lineup and probably right-handed.
So just to run through my take here, I do believe the Red Sox want to move Devers to first. I don't believe Devers wants it, but he's not going to have a ton of say in it. I mean, he's got his money either way, so he shouldn't really throw a fit about that. But you have heard, you hear it every year, you know, Devers will have two or three errors in a week. He'll have one of his worst weeks of the year. Then the conversation starts. Do you move him to first? Do you DH him? And then Devers gets really defiant and says, no, I'm a third baseman. That's where I play. And Cora, for the most part, will back him on that. And they had a conversation last August, and a lot of that conversation had heated back up, moving Devers off a third. And Cora privately assured Devers, he says, listen, or this was probably before August, actually, because Cora got his extension in July. So maybe it was in the first half. But Cora says, listen, I don't know how long I'm going to be managing here, but for as long as I am, you are my third baseman. That's where you will play. So there's that. But I think Devers is sick of losing, and I think if they promise him he's going to have a big bat hitting in front of him or right behind him, he can be persuaded to move to first base, and I think that could happen. Let me address Nolan Arenado, because that was brought into it. I'm more open to this than perhaps you guys might be. He's got three guaranteed years left. One of them is at $32 million, but the Rockies are paying five, so that's $27 million this coming season. The following season, he's owed $27 million, but the Rockies are paying five, so now he's down to $22 million. And then there's in 2027, there's a $15 million option, which is very palatable to me. What I'm not willing to do is pay the 10 years of deferred money, which is only about $2 to $4 million a year, but I'm not taking that on. I think that's dumb for a team to structure. I wouldn't even do that for Soto. I'm going to pay him for as long as he's here, and that's it. I want to be done with the contract. We're still paying Manny. I think it's just bad business for these teams to operate like that. But so the Cardinals will pay all the deferred money, and that's the only way I would take the next 3 years off the books for them. But, and here's my thing. Is he going to be MVP Nolan Arenado? No, probably not. Not coming into his age 34 season, but he hit 272 last year, 16 bombs, had a 325 on base. And I think he would be a little more energized playing at Fenway, a team that's actually committed to winning. A team that has the resources to win if they, you know, keep their word this year and go back to their old ways. And I don't need him to be MVP Nolan Arenado. I need him to be Mike Lowell from 2007 to 2010. Give me that. He's still going to be a good at bat. He's going to keep the line moving. And I'm okay with it. Is it my first choice? Absolutely not. But I'd rather do that than pay Bregman for 6 or 7 years. Or even Willie Adames. Let me mention that. Adames strikes out at an insane clip. And if we're not going to DFA Trevor Story in the next couple of years just to get him off the books, I don't want two guys in my lineup that are going to strike out 200 times each, so 400 combined. 173 last year, 165 the year before. That's not like insane, but it's I would say that's significant. And he doesn't always hit for average. He hit 251 last year, hit 217 the year before. He's kind of an all or nothing guy. I'm not interested. I might have traded for him a few years ago with 2 or 3 years of control left, but I don't want a long-term deal with Willie Adames. I just think that's going to be really painful starting in the second or third year of the deal. But I'm good with Arenado. I still think there's value there. And look at Goldschmidt. He was kind of written off, you know, in 2020, 2021. You know, people were looking at him as past his prime. Then he wins the MVP in 2022. So I still think there's a lot there. And if you want a good clubhouse guy, Nolan Arenado. If you got a young player that's slacking off, he's going to be the guy who goes in and gets in that player's face. So that's how I feel about that. Let me, before we kick it back and, you know, bounce some of the stuff around. I think the Red Sox do want to trade Casas. I really do. And the X factor here is Soto. If you sign Soto and you win the sweepstakes to Jeremy Schock, if it happens, Jaron Duran becomes your... He's now the big trade piece. You probably have to move because you got Anthony coming up. Rafael is probably still your center fielder of the future. There's just no place to put Duran, and he's got value. And he'll never have more value than this. So that's what happens if Soto gets signed. Now, if you don't sign Soto, I think you have to keep Duran because you need to keep your impact outfield bat. I mean, Anthony isn't ready yet. So now you pivot back to Casas, and he's your big chip. And if you're looking at the Mariners like I am, that's the team you send him to, and they have a need for a first baseman, and they have a need for a lefty. So, and for all the Casas people out there, the hardcore pro Casas people, he blew it, as far as I'm concerned. He blew it. As far as having a future in Boston, he was reckless with his antics in the clubhouse, the weird stuff that everybody had to tolerate, that everybody had to accommodate. He blew it with his antics with the media, being dishonest with them, misleading them about where he was at with his recovery. That's reckless. And Boston is not a city you mess around like that with the media. You're going to lose half the fan base as soon as you start acting like that. 50% right off the top. Not going to tolerate it. And I can't really prove this, but I think he was probably a little reckless with his mechanics, and that kind of led to him getting hurt, you know, being a psychopath. So I just think if Casas really wanted his career to play out with the Boston Red Sox, he blew it in a number of ways. And the thing he needs going forward is self-awareness. How am I impacting my team, my environment, and from a physical standpoint, am I putting myself in the best position to go out there and help my team win on a daily, weekly, and monthly basis? Because he gets himself hurt all the time. And he plays a position where... I mean, how many first basemen really get injured and you lose for most of the season? You're pretty stationary over there. You're just, you know, you might be knocking down some grounders from some lefties, but you're just covering the bag for the most part as the rest of the infield ships the ball over to you. So I'm all good with trading Casas. If we suddenly magically get right-handed heavy and he stays... And becomes a beast, so be it. I'll take the L on this take, but for now, he's definitely the guy I want to move.
Not to mention the fact that for whatever reason, and we don't know the details, but he's yet to really go any further with extension talks with the Red Sox. You know, Rafael, they locked up right away, and you know, we talked about that when it happens. You know, they kind of took advantage of a guy who had just come up for a cup of coffee, and they were, you know, able to get him on an extension, a pretty cheap extension, pretty quick. But Casas keeps balking on them. Now, maybe they're trying to lowball him, as, you know, wouldn't surprise me because they're the Red Sox. But still, that's not helping his case either, that he just, you know, won't put pen to paper when they've tried. I think he definitely at least pissed off the manager. I think, you know, that seemed pretty clear. Cora was very frustrated with how long he took to come back from his rehab stint. He pretty much took the max time that he was allotted. I think some of the members of the front office aren't thrilled with him and thrilled with the antics. You know, they're getting crap thrown on left and right from the fan base, and Casas is still out there when they're in last place sunbathing and doing all his weird stuff. So I think some of the front office execs aren't happy with him, but I think Breslow's a big fan of him. And I think that might be what it comes down to, is Breslow, just like I said earlier, I just don't know if he's going to be willing to pull the trigger. I think he looks at Casas as part of their future and wants to keep it that way. So I'm with you. If we find out, tomorrow that Casas was traded to Seattle and we get Gilbert or George Kirby back, I'm fine with it. We'll figure out the first base, third base shuffle later on. But because I'm kind of, the Casas act grew tired on me pretty quick. I'm not sure it's actually going to happen.
You really don't like Brian Wu, though? Like,
not for Casas. I mean, I'd take Brian Wu, but like, not for Casas. You can get better. Brian Wu is an IL stint waiting to happen every time he goes out on the mound. That guy is going to need Tommy John in the imminent future. And it just, I think like last year, he had to go on the IL like two or three times just to avoid his elbow blowing up and needing Tommy John. Like, he's a good pitcher, but, here he would be like your number three. But I'd rather go out and get like Gilbert or Kirby, and those guys are like your ace. So I just think you can do better with Casas.
Kirby is my dream candidate. Crochet gets mentioned a lot. I like Kirby. He strikes guys out and he doesn't walk anyone. Wu doesn't walk anyone, so that's the appeal to me. The strikeout.
Kirby's
rate.
Right-handed, right?
He is, but you got to take him if it's viable, I would say.
Terry, you said one thing I wanted to touch on, and that was the Devers being involved in the process to move to first base. I think it's clear as day he will be. The only way he agrees to go to first base is he knows the cause and the effect of that move. So that means he's going to be management has to go to him and say, you're going to first base, but that's because we're getting fill in the blank player at third. We're moving Casas for pitching or whatever. It's the only way it's going to happen. And I think Devers has earned that. I don't have an issue with that at all. So, in fact, I would be shocked if they took the gamble of doing it without having him in the fold and upsetting him and causing a problem, because he's one of the few players that have mentioned at the deadlines in Fort Myers that he expects the team to improve through front office moves. I'd like to revisit my Arenado. Arenado take. The context of the money and the fact that he is so good defensively, I would be willing at 30. I think he's 33. I'm taking that take back and saying I would be okay with that as well.
Cushman talked him into it.
I hate it because it's the truth. Is it the context of your take had an effect on me?
I think I'm still a no. Unfortunately, Terry didn't talk me into it all the way. But if it comes down to a choice between Arenado or Bregman, I guess I take Arenado, because I agree Bregman's probably going to want some stupid contract that isn't going to be worth it, halfway through. So at least Arenado, you've got a little more control of his contract, and the money does go down year by year. So I like that aspect of it, but it's still like, I mean, I'll take him over Bregman, but I still wouldn't be thrilled with it.
Well, and management is never going to okay a big contract for Bregman. It's not going to happen. So I'm not even worried about that as a possibility.
I hope you're right.
Honestly, if we're getting Bregman, I might almost want him to play first base. I don't know how tall he is, but he's had some wear and tear. That was an issue in the past year. I just think that's kind of, in a way, how you protect your investment a little bit if you're going to go 6 to 7 years on him.
And they're not going to do that. There's 0.0 repeating, zero chance.
I don't think they're going to want him either, to be honest. But I think he could flame out a little bit He could get Trevor Story syndrome out there at third base. But
yeah. I think the other aspect of that too is if they're negotiating with him and they bring up the idea of putting him at first, he's walking out the door. So he wants to be a third baseman. He must be paid like a third baseman. So yeah, I think for a multitude of reasons, it won't happen.
That's true. And Boris is always quick to defend players at their positions. Like when we hadn't quite signed JD Martinez yet, Boris was like shredding outfield metrics and why it doesn't matter for JD and all that. And, you know, and then we signed him and he was a DH anyway. And we got him at our price too, not Boris's price. Paid him about half the money he was looking for. And yeah, so it's interesting to see like how all the pieces play out. I mean, I've never seen a winter where you got so many different avenues to accomplish so many different goals. You know, a guy like Jaren Duran is not expendable on most teams' rosters, but he is on ours. Same as Tristan Casas. If you want to keep those two players, you have prospect capital. You can do it that way. You've got money capital. You can just buy who you want, you know, within reason. So it's scary to me that Breslow's the guy here because I don't think he really knows what he's doing. He hasn't really demonstrated that yet. He can make some, you know, lower consequential trades, like for instance, Alex Verdugo for Richard Fitz, and that's not going to hurt us. But when you're talking, I mean, he's essentially got the nuclear codes. And I don't know that he really understands that aspect of being an executive. He worked remotely in the Cubs front office. He wasn't even there every day. He worked remotely, worked from home. So that was the extent of his executive experience before we got him. So maybe it works out. Maybe it surprises us. I gave him a chance at the deadline last year, and we got James Paxton. You know, we could have got Kikuchi. And that's another thing, too, before we do get to Soto. I would say Kikuchi's a significant piece here, and he's off the board now because the Angels have signed him to a three-year deal worth $63 million. And I wouldn't be surprised in the next 24, 48 hours if you lose a couple more guys off the board. And why that's worth noting is I think one of the reasons Breslow failed epically last year is the market sped up on him too fast. A bunch of guys came off the board. A bunch of other guys weren't affordable anymore. The trade prices were higher if he wanted to go that route. And then you ended up with Giolito. So hopefully he can handle the speed of the market this year.
Yeah, I don't think you're going to see many pitchers holding out until February, March for contracts this time. I think they want to get signed faster.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think people look at Blake Snell and Jordan Montgomery especially, and they're like, wow, they had trash seasons. They didn't get to spring training on time. In fact, I don't think Montgomery even signed until close to opening day. So, and then wasn't even up with the club until mid-May or so. So that's not good, obviously, but the one thing too that we can talk about real quick is the Red Sox can go sign a starting pitcher. Like that market's not held up right now. It hasn't gotten going until yesterday with Kikuchi, but if Max Fried, Blake Snell, or Corbin Burnes is your guy and we've been connected to them supposedly, you can go get those guys. There's nothing holding that up. Who's your guy of the big four, Jason? Who's the guy you want?
Well, the guy I want is Burnes. I don't think that they're going to go that, you know, as far as they need to go to get him. The guy that I would next want, who I realistically think they could get, is Max Fried. And even that one I'm a little iffy on because he's not a high strikeout guy. relies a lot on ground balls. And let's face it, as Jeremy said earlier, we don't catch the ball very well on this team. So I know Story being at shortstop will help, but you can't guarantee he's going to be there all season. So second base is a mystery. Devers is average at third if he stays there. I don't know how Devers would be at first yet if you move him. That remains to be seen. But if that scenario plays out and you got Arenado at third, a guy like Max Fried would be a good option. So I want Burns, but I think realistically and what I would next want would be Max Fried.
Jeremy, do you have one in mind?
I mean, I just want some balance. And for that reason, I want a left-handed starting pitcher and a right-handed bat, just if we're talking about general roster construction. And look, I'm not saying no to a right-handed, like I'm not saying no to Fried. I'm not, it puts us back in the same spot where we're too dependent on one side. Good teams don't build that way. They just don't. Teams that are competing for World Series don't build that way. You may end up that way because of circumstance, injury, whatever, but teams build balanced rosters and both in the pitching staff and in the lineup, that's not what we are.
Well, Fried is a lefty. That's why I wanted him as the next option down. And the reason, like, so Blake Snell is probably the better pitcher between him and Fried of the two lefties, but Snell to me is David Price 2.0. That guy's personality is not going to cut it in this market. I can just bank on that. So the other thing with Snell too is he's had a very like up and down career. He's had peaks and valleys. Like his peaks are Cy Young years, but his valleys are like he doesn't make that many starts. He's inconsistent. ERA is over 5. That guy with his personality and the inconsistency, just that scares me. So I'd take Fried at that point.
I would only take Snell if it's a 2-year deal. And I think he's going to get more than that. He's only pitched over 130 innings twice. Those were both of his Cy Young years, but twice in probably close to, well, probably not quite a decade, but he's been around a while. So not a ton of innings there. Max Fried has had some big starts in the postseason. If you look at his postseason ERA, it looks bad. It's just over 5, but that's that was kind of a few bad starts kind of blew that up. But he's my guy. That's the guy I really want. He's going to be cheaper than Burns. And with Burns, you look at the strikeout rate, it's dropped. The velocity's come down a little bit. Having said that, he still finds ways to get guys out. I mean, he was, I don't know where he finished in the Cy Young. I'm guessing second or third this year, but I would still take him. Don't get me wrong, but I think Fried is, I just think it'll be the right money, the right years, the right fit. Final thoughts, yeah. Jeremy?
All right, and I don't know what I was thinking on Fried. I was thinking of a different pitcher in my brain. What is the likelihood that the Red Sox, who have notoriously not wanted to pay people on the wrong side of 30, actually make a move for one of these guys? Like, would we even be in on it based on the history?
I mean, they kind of don't have a choice at this point, because especially with all the comments they've already made just to start the offseason saying, nope, like we're done finishing in last place. We want to be competitive. You've got a pretty strong starting pitching free agent market right now. I mean, it's definitely separated by tiers. Like tier one is Burns, Fried, Snell. Tier two is, you know, Kikuchi was probably the top end of tier two. After that, there was a drop off, but it's still a pretty strong free agent class of pitching. And yeah, like most of those guys are over 30, except for Burns. I think he's either just turning 30 or he's still 29, but they're not like, you know, Fried is 31. He's not that old. Snell is 32. You know, those guys still have some pretty good years left in him. So, and I don't think you're going to need like a 7-year contract to get him. I think 5 years with a strong AAV gets Max Fried. So, and again, like, they don't have a choice. They can't go into next year with the same rotation they have now. They can't do it. The pitching depth absolutely killed them last year when guys started to go down because they don't have anything. As I've said numerous times, they have nothing coming up in the system. No pitching yet. Now, they've got some interesting guys like, you know, David Sandlin looks like a pretty good pitching prospect. I know Hunter Dobbins had a good year last year, but it's not like those guys are, you know, ready to make major league starts right now. Even Richard Fitz, like, yeah, he looked good, but would you trust Richard Fitz through a full season to, you know, to really develop and take a step forward? I don't know. I mean, maybe he does, but I wouldn't be, you know, overly confident about it. So they kind of don't have a choice. They really need to go out and get at least one of those guys. I know they, you know, the whole rumor is they want two of Burns, Fried, or Snell. They're probably going to get one if they get any of them at all. I think getting two is pretty ambitious, especially with all the other teams clamoring for them. But you got to get at least one of those guys in that top tier, because if they come away with free agency with just another aging veteran on a one-year $10 million deal, it's going to be just – they truly will be a laughingstock at that point.
I think with Fried especially, I think Burns is the only guy I'd put in the David Price category who's going to get possibly 7 years north of 200. The others are under it. I don't view them as super high risk, especially Fried. And you could put a clause in there. If he loses a year due to Tommy John, another year gets added at 10 or 12 million, you know, as protection. I don't think that's a make or break thing for Fried, but it's not a super elite class. I wouldn't say that. I mean, Burns is your only bona fide ace. And I think Snell falls short due to the inconsistency. But yeah, so I don't see it as a class where there's tons of risk. Let's go ahead and pivot over to Soto. So Jason, just go ahead. What's your read on it right now?
I'm skeptical of how much the Red Sox are in it, but I do believe that as long as the money is right, they should be right up there with the Mets, Yankees, Dodgers in terms of him actually wanting to, you know, take real meetings and really wanting to consider it. But it does depend on the money. And I was a little bit put off by that that tweet from, and I don't know how legit it is. You know, it's the lying season, but Hector Gomez saying the Red Sox have already upped their initial offer to Soto after the other teams got involved. That's a little scary, because what does that mean? Does that mean they came in with like 10 years, 250, and then, you know, Yankees come in with $500 million, Cohen and the Mets come in with a $600 million offer, and they go, oh, we should probably be a little bit higher, or else that's going to look really embarrassing. So let's up it to like 10 years, 420 or something. Smoke them if you got them. Like, let's do something like that. That way it's not totally embarrassing if we miss out. We were only off by about 80 million or something like that. I don't know. I have a hard time believing that John Henry, who's been out on his yacht in Alaska, just not paying attention to this team and not giving a damn, is suddenly going to like wake up and go, you know what? Yeah, I'll give one guy a $600 million contract. Sure. Yeah, I'll do it. No problem. Yeah, no, we're back in it. I'm awake now. Let's go. Like, I just have a hard time believing that. I do think they want the player, but as usual with the Red Sox, I think they want him at their price. And when it comes down to it, I think the Yankees are going to get outbid. I said this earlier this offseason. I think he's going to be a Met, because I think Steve Cohen's just going to give him a ludicrous monetary offer. Like, you know, the reports are like, oh, it's probably going to exceed $600 million. I could see Steve Cohen just being like, let's put a 7 in front of that. You want to come be a Met? There you go, 700. Like, sounds crazy, but I could see a guy like Cohen doing it. He's that much of a nut job that he could do it. So I think the Red Sox will try, but they're going to fall short. John Henry is going to get spooked once that number keeps going up, and he's going to back out. So they'll give him a somewhat legit offer, hopefully, because, God, if it comes out that they were like $300 million off from Soto, it's going to be so embarrassing for that ownership group, especially for a guy like John Henry, who's worth $6 billion. He has the money to do it. Like, he absolutely has the money to do it. And, you know, hopefully they give him a real offer. I think they're going to fall short, and I think he's going to go to the Mets.
Quick angle here. How many years do you think the contract will be?
I think it'll end up being like 12 to 13, but I do think there will be opt-outs in like the middle of it. Maybe not after like the first 2 to 3 years, maybe after like year 4 or 5. Yeah.
Yeah.
He'll want to sign with a team that he thinks like is going to develop and like, you know, have like prospects to supplement and stuff like that and contend for a World Series in a good 3 to 5 year window. And if he signs with a particular team and they blow up their farm system and they don't do it right, he's going to want to bail. So I think it'll be around 12 to 13 years, but with opt-outs in the middle.
I think it'll be more in the 14 to 15 area. Tatis got 14 years. And just one angle, I mean, John Henry is, I don't know how old he is, but there's probably a 50% chance or more he's going to be dead by the end of this contract. So I wonder if that's, you know, part of it. So I don't know. But Jeremy, go ahead.
The Boston Red Sox have no interest in signing Soto because of the price tag. Every team wants Juan Soto. Every team. If they could get him at their price. Okay, to be a serious contender, you have to read the market and outbid everybody else. They're not prepared to do that. There has been no indication in the last 10 plus years that they're willing to do that. So what they're doing and what they've done in the past is they've shown interest. They're the first ones to get Sox are interested. And for years, people bought it. And then people started not buying it. So now we have to come up with a faux offer that is going to be a number that they can say, look, we went as far as we're willing to go to commit a percentage of the dollars to one player against the cap. And that's what we offered. Knowing all the time, they're not going to get the player. They have no interest in saddling themselves with a $600 million deal. I don't think it's going to take $600 million personally, but there is no indication in this team's recent ownership that they're willing to do that. I mean, it would be one of the biggest out of character moves we've seen in Boston sports in forever. I just refuse to believe it until it happens. And I don't care what source, what Twitter personality comes out and the chatter about this team is more than anything else. Until they do it, I don't buy it. Sam Kennedy is a proven liar. Time in and time out. Nothing he says is real. Nothing he says is the truth. He is a lying scumbag. So you want me to take you seriously? I want to see a tweet that says, from John Henry, we've offered 13 years, $580 million. Then I'll believe it. But they're not doing that. The Red Sox want to put pressure on Soto. They want to put pressure on Boris. They can leak the offer. It happens. But the offer's 10 years, $300 million, $360 million, $380. They know it's not good enough.
I'm not questioning the sincerity here. I think they want him. I think they're going to be in on him. Just looking at the landscape here. I'm just writing out all the teams right now. So you got the Red Sox, you got the Mets, you got the Yankees, Dodgers, and Blue Jays. I'm not buying the Blue Jays are in on him because they're not even extending Vladimir Jr. That's a much better value, in my opinion, than signing Soto, because you're going to get him at no more than 2/3 of what Soto gets. Okay, so I'm ruling out the Blue Jays right now. Done. I'm going to rule out the Dodgers as well. They've got a ton of money on the books just between, well, four players, really. You got Yoshida. I owe Ohtani an apology. You've got Ohtani for $700 million. Yamamoto for still north of $3 billion. So that's $1 billion right there with a B for two players. You got Mookie Betts still for another, I don't know, 7 or 8 years, massive money. You're not adding Juan Soto to that for 2/3 of $1 billion, possibly. It's just not happening. And the Dodgers had to defer money off of Teoscar Hernandez's one-year contract. They deferred money off of a one-year deal. I'm ruling out the Dodgers right now. The Dodgers are out. So now you've got the Yankees, Red Sox, and Mets. The Yankees are a tough sell for me also. You still got Garrett Cole at major money. You've got Aaron Judge at major money. The Giancarlo Stanton deal, the end is getting to be in sight with that. You got 3 years left, close to $100 million. But, you know, it's still big money on the books for now. You owe Carlos Rodon a bunch of money. I don't see how that helps them. And if you're Juan Soto and you want to win, you're looking at it like I've got like a 2 year window here to get it done before some of these contracts look really bad. I don't know what Garrett Cole's going to be in 2 or 3 years. Probably serviceable, but he's not going to be an ace. I don't know how many games a year Aaron Judge is going to be playing 2 to 3 years from now. Probably not 140. The guy gets hurt a lot. DH will be open for him once Stanton leaves. But if you're Juan Soto and winning is important, I don't really see the Yankees as a fit at this point. And you just went to the World Series with them, by the way, and didn't even come close. You saw your ace like quit on the team defensively by not covering the bag. So now you've got the Red Sox and the Mets in terms of a fit. And here's the thing. The Red Sox don't have a group of superstars to attract Soto at this point. Maybe you do in a few years if one or two of these prospects pans out, but you don't have the luxury of being in this race for Juan Soto and then signing him and then not being the top bidder. You have to be the highest bidder. That's the only way you're getting Juan Soto. It's not a privilege to play in Boston. If it was a privilege to play in Boston, Zach Eflin would have chose us over the Tampa Bay Rays. We offered him the same exact contract. Same thing with Charlie Morton. If it was a privilege to play in Boston, Morton would have chose us over the Rays. That was probably 4 or 5 years ago at this point. Jose Abreu was a guy the Red Sox wanted. And I'm not going to lie, I would have taken him on a 2-year deal. I would have been wrong. It wouldn't have aged well. But the Red Sox wanted him. I thought it was a fit. He chose the Astros. Same exact contract. He chose the Astros. So if you want Juan Soto, you better be the top bidder. I don't know that the Red Sox have the self-awareness to know that. Another thing that came out this week, I forget who reported it. Soto said that it's important to him to have a strong rapport with the owner. John Henry's not going to be texting Juan Soto on a daily basis. That's just not the type of owner he is. But in terms of the money, the luxury tax this year is at 241. By the end of this collective bargaining agreement, I think there's 3 years remaining, it's going to be up in the 260s. So that's how a $40 to $50 million a year player becomes affordable in terms of staying under the luxury tax. It's going up. And then when that deal expires, the next CBA will probably bring the luxury tax north of 300 or close to. So you got that going on. I don't know. Like, I want to sit here and believe right now that the Red Sox are sick of being slaughtered in the media. They're sick of not being respected by players across the league, and they're sick of not being respected by players' agents. The Red Sox have no friends. Nobody is defending the Red Sox in any aspect of Major League Baseball, from the fan side, from the journalism side, from the players and agent side. The Red Sox have no friends. They had to hire Craig Breslow to be their chief baseball officer. That's how little respect they commanded. And I think they're at a point now where Juan Soto is a major step in fixing that. So that's part of why I believe there is some sincerity here. Whether or not they can execute, whether or not they can convince him that they're being sincere is a whole different animal. And that's where I'm at with the Soto thing.
Yeah, they should be in it. They should definitely be in it. The one thing that, and you know, there's always these like rumors, reports, whatever. You're not sure what to really believe. But like, if you are to believe that part of what Soto wants is he wants to be like the guy, you know, with whatever team he signs with, Boston's kind of the only place where he would be the guy. Not in New York. That's Aaron Judge's team. Not even with the Mets. That's Lindor's team. And certainly not with the Dodgers. That's Ohtani's show. So if he wants to be the guy, and you know, he certainly doesn't want to be in Judge's shadow anymore. Like, I agree with you about the Yankees. Like, he probably looks at it and goes, last year was our best shot. And the guy whose shadow I'm living in didn't show up in October. And, you know, all their pitchers are getting older and, you know, Stanton probably won't do what he did in the playoffs again, you know, next year. So I think they're out. And yeah, like the Dodgers, that's Ohtani's show. He doesn't want to be, you know, second fiddle to Ohtani. The Mets, you could argue that if he goes there, maybe he is the guy. Lindor's a really good player, but you could argue Lindor, Juan Soto, who's better? Soto probably at his best is. I mean, Lindor had a really good second half last year, but for the first half, he wasn't doing anything. So, you know, even the Mets, he might be the guy, but certainly Boston, he comes here, he's a megastar. He's the guy in Boston. So that might be one thing where they could appeal to him. And, you know, maybe that's why you get David Ortiz on the recruitment trail and say, hey, you know, like you could be the next guy to lead this franchise to, you know, 4 more World Series like I did. He was part of 3 of them, but still, like, you know, something like that. But I agree, it that pitch will help, but it's also got to be, the money's got to be legit. You've got to be the highest bidder. Because if you come under what the Mets are willing to offer him, you're not going to get him.
Do we know that he cares about being the guy?
No, and that's the whole thing. I have no idea. Like, that's been a rumor that's been out there that, like, that's kind of what he wants. And I think a lot of people just kind of sort of spoke that into existence. I have no idea. But if it is true, this is the spot where he would be the guy.
I mean, my understanding is that he cares about the money. And I don't blame him. I've said that a ton of times on this podcast. I never blame the players for wanting top dollar. And Terry, your take was a good take. I hate to be, you know, the episode where I kind of start to relent to agree, but it was a well-reasoned take, and I don't disagree with you on your what you think. I just think you're wrong, and I think they think that they can go trade for Crochet or go sign Fried or move Devers to first, you know, or do some other combination of moves that shows they're serious without having to fork over $600 to $700 million. Because at the end of the day, John Henry cares about one thing, and that's the dollar bill. We're an asset in his profile, remember? So I'm sitting here going, maybe I got to soften on my take. Nope. Then I realize we're still talking about John Henry. And now, with that said, I hope you're right. I hope they're serious, because you can't just go blow the money on Soto and then put nothing around him. You still have to build a balanced roster to make us a true contender. And I think if they spend the money on Soto, they basically force themselves to do that. But I just don't see it happening. I just don't.
In a perfect world, you're not gonna sign that contract. Okay. And the fact that you're seriously considering it is a consequence of how stupid you were in the past 5 or 6 years. So that's one thing. And I'm never the guy, and I'm not dying on the Soto Hill. I'm not saying I'm not emotionally investing myself in the possibility that we might sign him. I'm not going there. And you've got a lot of problems still after you sign him. You're still lefty heavy, even though he does hit lefties fairly well. But your best right-handed bat right now is Connor Wong. That's a problem that still needs to be addressed this winter. So it's not the perfect fit. It's not the most ideal circumstances, but it's a move uncharacteristically I'm willing to make. But, you know, you could do a better job balancing your team. Look what the Astros did all those years. The Braves did a good job, too. They worked their trade capital very well to get some very good players. And then they signed a couple of the homegrown guys, Austin Riley, Ronald Acuna. So that's the way we need to be doing it. But go ahead.
So this segment has been about whether we think it's going to happen, what's the likelihood it's going to happen, and what's the price tag to make it happen. We haven't asked ourselves yet, do we want it to happen? And I'll answer first. I don't want Soto at $600 million. I don't want him. I know this ownership group. They will say they've done the offseason's over and they will fail to build an actual competitive roster that has aspirations to go to the World Series and do it year in, year out. I would much rather see Cassis in a prospect for Vlad Jr., go get Crochet and build a well-balanced lineup that doesn't cripple you financially for years to come, because they're not going to do what the Dodgers are doing. I don't care if they do spend, they're not going to go to that length. They're not going to do it. And one of the reasons why they're not going to do it is because it's an asset in a portfolio. And if you have $1 billion deferred dollars, who's going to buy that team? Because that's the way they're looking at it. They're not looking at it as like, you know, let's win now. No, they're looking at it, well, when I want to sell it, and I'm sure they even probably know when they want to, how marketable is the brand, Nesson, the roster, the deferred money? Those things matter. So I want to be in the race every year. That's my goal. I don't expect to win it every year, but if you're in the race year in and year out, you're going to walk into a championship here and there. And I don't think them spending the money on Soto is going to get us there. So for that reason, I'm out on Soto. I strongly believe they're not even taking it seriously. I think it's all smoke and mirrors. But if you were to ask me, do I want them to go sign the player for $600 million? The answer is no.
And just to reiterate something I've said, and I still believe this, I think they're really gambling on the opt-out. They're going to put it in there. Boris is going to ask for it, whether or not he actually does it or not when the time comes. That's a totally different answer. But, you know, his age 26 through 29 years, that's 4 years. If you add the age 30, that's an extra year. He should win at least one MVP in that window, maybe two, especially at Fenway. He's about to play in the most hitter-friendly ballpark. Well, I shouldn't say that because he didn't have the short porch. in Yankee Stadium. But still, I think the Red Sox are gambling that he's going to opt out. By then, they're going to have developed Anthony, probably signed him to an 8 to 10 year deal. One or two of their other big prospects is going to pan out. Maybe even Christian Campbell, which would be nice because he's a righty. But they only need him to get their credibility back, to get competitive, to get jump-started in a competitive way. Soto's going to help you attract maybe that starting pitcher you want. Here's one other thing. This is a crazy thing. I don't even know if I believe this, but it's a thought that popped into my head. It's probably out of left field. The Red Sox, well, John Henry, Fenway Sports Group, they want to acquire a basketball team. And apparently, more likely than not, it'll be Vegas. But I don't think they've put the Celtics thing to bed yet. You bring Soto in and suddenly you're sexy. I don't know. Maybe the Celtics owners are willing to sell it to Henry. I'm
not prepared for the emotional journey of even considering that, Terry. Why are you doing that?
That would be such a nightmare for Celtics fans. I dread that thought.
We're so well built. We are right now the top NBA franchise. Like they're built to win for like the next 5 years, and you're going to bring in this podcast John Henry buying them and ruin that for me. That was a personal attack, and I've agreed with most of what you said. That is that, but here, in all seriousness, where in the world do you think they actually believe that signing Soto helps them build credibility with the same fan base with regards to buying the local basketball team? Because I don't think now, and you may disagree with this, Terry. I don't think them signing Soto turns the John Henry haters around. I don't think it's one move. Again, I think not. If you're going to go after the independent thinking Boston Red Sox fan, you need to make the entire program competitive, which means World Series contender. And not until you do that will you build the credibility with basically the exact same fan base, which already has that in place. The immediate fear is that John Henry is going to trade multiple assets to get below the tax threshold. And I know we're not talking about basketball. And it'll drive the fan base nuts. I think it's a disaster.
I don't want John Henry to buy the Celtics either.
I don't want John Henry to buy anything else. He's already spread too thin. Focus on the Red Sox. It's a dumpster fire. They're just so inadequately built, generally speaking. Anyways, I'm going to need a therapy session after this.
Now, and you get a chunk of your credibility back with Soto. You're not all the way back, but it's the biggest pivot you can make to getting it back.
Credibility comes back when you make multiple strategic decisions to build a competitive. You don't get credibility back just by spending money. You don't. I mean, congratulations. You're the highest bidder.
Well, it's an investment, though, towards winning again, I would say. That's how I look at it.
Yeah, I mean, at the very least, if they do go out and they actually do get Soto, it is a sign that, like, we're serious about winning, because you don't make an investment that large on one guy if you don't think, you know, we can get back to the World Series and this is the first step. I agree with Jeremy's point that, like, you need to do a little bit more. You can't just get Soto and then go, oh, okay, offseason's over. We're good. Carter Crawford's still going to be our number three starter. Like, no, you need to do a little bit more, but it is a good first step.
If we can put ourselves in a position to where Cutter Crawford is in a trade, you did something big. You know, you're doing something, you're going to do something significant offensively, whether it's Soto or not. It might be Teoscar, but you're doing something significant there. And if Cutter's in a deal, then you got a big time pitcher back somehow, because he's your most expendable guy if you're bringing in someone.
Yeah, in general, I'd agree. Yeah.
All right. Well, I said it would be a loaded episode, and I think we delivered on that. The next one, well, who knows what the next one could be. We do have part three coming up in the MLB trade rumors list. But I tentatively, barring an emergency episode, I don't think we'll be back before Sunday. So, but if we do, it's probably a good thing. So we'll see. But we're just kind of podcasting by the seat of our pants at this point as things develop. So we'll be back more sooner than later. If we're not back before Thursday, everyone have a safe holiday. Be safe on the roads. And we'll be back with you more sooner than later. Take care.